Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Mark Durden, who runs the Keyman Project, and you can check it out at keyman.com. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
All right. But you don't have a Cambodian accent, I must say.
No, I'm an Australian working there, running a software team out of Phnom Penh.
Mm-hmm. And how long has Keyman been run?
So I wrote the first version of Keyman back in 1992, I think, when I was about 14 years old.
Seriously?
Yeah, so I was living in Laos at that point with my parents.
And you, this is like, what is that now, 26 years?
Yes, it's a very long time.
Did you think that this would be an open source project you would be working on for basically your entire life?
No, I didn't have any idea of that at the time. So there was a specific need that my father had. Mm-hmm. Back in 1992, so it was not long after the release of Windows 3.1 mm-hmm. and TrueType fonts. And this was like magic because we could all of a sudden write the Laos script. And I don't know do you know anything about the Laos script?
So I do not.
So the Laos script doesn't look very much like our Latin script we use in English. It mm-hmm. has marks, vowels that go above and below and to the left and to the right of the base character.
Is it a syllabary?
It's not. It's technically an alphabet because everything is written, but it's related to a lot of the Indian languages in the way that it's written.
And in 1992, how would one write this?
So in 1992, there was really no good way to type Lao in Windows. So people had made fonts where they replaced the English characters with Lao characters. So you pressed a T, press letter T, and instead of it coming out with an English letter T, it would come out with a Lao letter, but it would actually be stored as a letter T in your document.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you would open up a text file and it would just look like a bunch of random Latin letters, but if you applied the font, you'd be looking through it through a different set of lenses.
Yeah, that's correct. And that kind of works until you want to do, you know, two languages in one text document or text field in a database or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to do any kind of ligatures or have fonts butt up against each other and attach, that becomes challenging, if not impossible.
You can't do anything smart with the fonts, no.
Mm-hmm. And is this before Unicode kind of got together and made all the different, you know, Unicode names for all the different characters?
Yeah, so this is still in the days of code pages. So 256 characters, of which about, 64 of them are non grata, really.
Hmm. And I understand that when Lao's alphabet was added into Unicode, there's even a permanent error in Unicode. With regards to two different names for characters in Lao.
Yes, I believe I actually reported that one. So there was just two of the letters had their names swapped. It's a bit awkward, but you can still use the letters.
I assume that this is hidden from the typist.
Yeah, you don't see it in day-to-day use. Only the font geeks see it when they're trying to do their new fonts and the Unicode geeks.
So you're 14 and you want to type Lao, so you start writing C and C++?
Yeah, so the basic thing we wanted to do is we wanted to shift the Lao alphabet into the upper ASCII section above 128 and in practice above 160, because that range from 128 to 159 is dodgy for general use. So that means we lost the characters that were up there, which were the European extended ASCII with letters with diacritics and some currency symbols and things like that. But that didn't really impact a lot of what we were doing. But the problem is that we didn't have a way to actually key those symbols once we actually moved them up there. So I got hold of a Windows SDK. We probably shouldn't talk too much about how legitimate that was in those days. And didn't have access to any documentation or MSDN CDs or anything like that. So I worked from the header files, being a 14-year-old with lots of time, and, and figured out how to create a hook application or a hook DLL that would capture the keystrokes and allow me to spit out whichever character I wanted.
And were you already a computer person at this point?
Yes, I was highly interested in computers. I think if, if my parents hadn't restricted me, I probably would have spent most of my awake time playing with a computer.
So this initially was the intersection of your interest in language, your interest in the country you're living in, and a problem that was unsolved.
Yeah, you know, I wrote computer games before that, just like most teenage computer programmers.
So you wrote this as a Windows app itself, or did it hook in and look like part of Windows?
It was a Windows app, and there weren't really any hooks in Windows to allow you to control the keyboard layout at that point. So it was a separate app that ran. It actually showed a little icon in the title bar of the active application, and you could click on that icon to switch between English and Lao.
Had you intended that this would be English and then N number of other languages, or was it just a matter of solving the problem for Lao?
So initially it was just Lao. It was fairly hard-coded and it was fairly hacky. But it wasn't very long after we wrote, after I wrote the first version, we had some visitors and they saw this program and they said, oh, we can definitely use this for such and such a language in Thailand. And I don't remember what language it was now. And so that meant I had to rewrite it to make it so that they could define the table for mapping the keyboard. So I wrote Keyman version 2. And they took that away and they started using it for a number of languages in Southeast Asia. And these were people with the organization that I work with now, which is SIL, Summer Institute of Linguistics. And so at that point, it wasn't an open source project. I don't think I'd heard of open source. But it was a free project. So the software was completely free of charge.
And had you thought about this other than just it was a hobby and it was helpful to people? And again, you said you're a teenager, so you have all the time in the world.
That's right. So I was homeschooled, so I was very flexible on my hours. And I just like to make something that helped people.
And at what point, though, did this turn into what is now how many keyboards?
So now we have over 700 different keyboards on the website, covering over 1,000 different languages.
Wow. Is this something where you were have been working on this kind of more or less full-time for the last 26 years, or was there any downtime where you were doing this and then went off to university and then came back and people were still using it?
Yeah, so around about 1996, I went to university. Before I left Laos, I'd never actually used the internet, so I had no idea about it. The internet was illegal in Laos in those days.
Wow.
So I came to Tasmania in Australia for university, And one of the things I discovered when I started university was that I actually needed money to live. And this was a bit of a shock. So I had to get some work, and then I realized that I could sell licenses of Keyman and actually make money and actually keep working on it. So I had a challenge for a while of, well, can I make enough money to actually work on Keyman? And that was a tension, I guess, until 2015 or so. So the selling licenses of software is
a, so did you turn that into your own company, or did you license it to a company?
So I turned it into my own company, and I ran it pretty much part-time until about 2010 or so. And then from 2010 through to 2015, I was running the company full-time, but the software never made a profit itself.
Okay, so this is like, yes, you know, people who are farming for subsistence. This is subsistence coding at this point.
It is, yeah. And you know, you do contract work and that kind of thing, and that brings enough money in to do the thing that you're passionate about, and that works. But it does take a bit out of your life, out of your family after a while.
Yeah, indeed. And when did you start enlisting volunteers and making this pluggable? So you went from one keyboard to thousands.
So that really happened when I made the keyboard language for designing a keyboard layout back in version 2 of Keyman. It exploded at that point, back in 1993 or 1994. So that was all distributed by FloppyNet, really, in Southeast Asia, and then throughout into the US. I don't know how it was distributed for the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. And by FloppyNet, you're literally saying enthusiastic people tell their friends, and then they meet up and copy floppies in basements somewhere.
Pretty much. SIL did take it on as a project that they wanted to use for very early on, back in 1994 and 1995. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of they had a distribution of software back in those days when you sent out CDs to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'd be on their CDs.
And what is SIL?
SIL is Summer Institute of Linguistics. So we're an organization that works in literacy and language development and Bible translation. So it's a Christian organization.
Mm-hmm.
And work with minority languages around the world.
Mm-hmm. So then they made this possible that you went from a free thing that you did as a hobby to a subsistence company, and now you are supported by this nonprofit?
Basically, yes. So I sold licenses of Keyman to a large number of organizations, people like BBC World Service.
Oh, wow.
They work in a lot of different languages. They were back in 2001 or so, they were working in 70 different languages. So they had a big need for being able to control the way they type things, and not necessarily using even the system supplied input methods, because they had people who were coming from very mixed areas where they didn't actually have consistent knowledge on how to use a computer, and people had designed their own systems, but they needed a single system in their studios.
Mm. And making it available to everyone, though, which is a kind of a game changer, because when I was dabbling with different languages 20 years ago, I was looking at Ethiopic scripts, Amharic, Tigrinya, and I would use a tool called Guz Pro, GE'EZ Pro. And it was like $59 or whatever. And there's a whole, for every language you're interested in, there's someone out there who has a product for, only $79 that you could install and then use the language, that you are interested in. By making Keyman available to everyone, it kind of disrupted the industry, wouldn't it?
So the first disruptor of the industry was actually Microsoft Keyboard Layout Creator.
Mm-hmm.
Because that made it possible for anyone to create a Windows keyboard for free. So at that point, I actually thought, oh, well, this is the end of Keyman, because there won't be enough money left in it for me to keep working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Keyman does a number of things that the Windows keyboards can't do. And it turns out that for a lot of languages, those things are actually really helpful. So a Windows keyboard, if you're familiar with how they work, if you look at English, you know, you press the T key and the T comes out. It seems pretty straightforward. But even there, we've got a whole bunch of things that are hidden from view. So if you look at the keycaps on your English keyboard, you can see a capital T, but you can't see a lowercase T.
Mm.
Somebody who's not familiar with the Latin script has a great deal of trouble using that because they can't actually find the letters that they can see written down if they want to type in Microsoft.com. Well, where's that little line with a dot above it, the I? It's not on the keyboard.
Mm. That is a really interesting exercise in empathy.
Yeah, it's actually so hard to actually step into that world of, oh, you know, how do I use my language on a computer? Because we're so surrounded as English speakers by everything being in English. It's like go to, you know, the Russian web for a few days and try and get anything done. We Yikes. Just can't do it.
Yeah. I'm looking at the E and realizing how different a capital E is from a lowercase e, to the point where if you're just learning English, you are effectively completely blocked.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So Microsoft Keyboard Layout Creator came out in 2007. So, you know, a little over 10 years from now. And you realized that while that was a bit of a disruptor, it wasn't a nail in the coffin for Keyman.
It wasn't, and partly because at about the same time, I created a web version of Keyman. So JavaScript had, you know, with Internet Explorer 6, I think about around that time too, had actually, you know, matured enough to the point that you could create a on-screen virtual keyboard and do the same things on the web as you were doing on a keyboard program in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And that sold to a number of organizations that were wanting to do web-based virtual keyboard in their websites, and that kept me going.
And aren't the fonts, though, that you need, like, not always available? I remember in the last 5-10 years, it just feels like suddenly the fonts I need are available, while just a couple of years back, I was still downloading fonts on a per-language basis.
Yes, it was always difficult. So Internet Explorer kind of solved the embedded font problem in some ways with the embedded OpenType EOT font format, but they were so hamstrung by all of the copyright issues that the format was very locked down. So it was very difficult to create an EOT font, and it only ever worked in Internet Explorer. So you would find that some websites would embed those fonts. Others would just have a, if you see square boxes, click this button to download a font message.
Mm. And did this quietly just go away because different operating systems woke up, or because people started creating open fonts and then we were able to seamlessly download them, or did the browsers start embedding them? Like right now I'm typing Lao in keymanweb.com and I don't remember ever installing any of that.
So it's a mixture of things. Windows 10 has a very large range of fonts by default. You know, for a lot of the languages, it's got a single font. For large languages, it has a nice collection. And so that means that, you know, if you're using Windows 10, then you're going to cover a lot of those languages. But if you go to a language like Chakma, you're probably going to see square boxes. I don't know if on keymanweb.com right
but
now.
Where is that language from? Chakma is Asian language?
It's Asian.
There we go.
Bangladesh, I think.
No, I've got fonts.
You've got fonts. Yay.
Yeah, I'm on Windows 10 Insiders, and it looks very swirly and circly.
Ah, you've got an embedded font. There you go. We have switched on the embedded font.
Oh, lovely. So I don't have those fonts, but I do because they're embedded in the browser.
Yeah, you can test that by copying and pasting into Notepad.
Yeah, you're right. I just copied it into Notepad and I got question marks. So that is for lack of a better word, obscure font.
It's less recently supported by, yeah, so it's actually in active development right now.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I want to be respectful of what the right language is to use when referring to these things, because we can use words like niche or minority languages, but what does that really mean? It just means that there's not millions and millions of people and that have heard of it, but it's still either actively used in written languages.
Yeah, that's right. So I actually don't know how many people speak Chagma. It's just one that I was been in recent development, so I was quite aware of it.
Mm-hmm. So Keyman on the web and Keyman on Windows and now also Mac and Android, is this sharing the same core engine or is this the same thing written multiple times?
It's the same thing written multiple times. There are some shared, there is some shared functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So the iOS, Android and web actually all share the JavaScript engine. And that's actually kind of cool. There's a reason for that. Is that on iOS, you weren't allowed to write an interpreter. So the Apple's App Store rules said you couldn't write an interpreter. And so we figured that given that Keyman keyboards are effectively a programming language, mm-hmm. a software program, that there'd be a good chance would be have our app rejected at some point if we tried to write it,
mm-hmm.
a new interpreter for those keyboards.
But then when Apple iOS 8 came out where you could have system-wide keyboards, that gives you the opportunity to jump in a very legitimate way and write your own keyboard. But then how do you support fonts for languages that Apple doesn't support? How do you render something like that?
So Apple, there's two halves to that story. One is the actual letter shapes themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the rendering engine that takes the letter shapes and puts them together in the right order and in the right place. Mm-hmm. So the renderer we have very little control over because it's buried deep in the system. But we can install fonts. So for about probably 90% of the languages that we work with, Apple's renderer already copes with the shapes, even if they don't supply a font. So and there is a way, because we can install a font, that means we can actually do what we need to use that language on iOS.
Interesting. And do you have telemetry or ways to tell that people are using this? I mean, are there any languages that you support where you legitimately don't know if anyone's even using it, but it was important to do because you wanted to do it?
So almost every single keyboard that's out there was submitted by somebody else, not by me. So
cool.
So there's maybe 10% of them were ones that I created. And they were ones that I was working with. And most of the time, those ones were keyboards where I was working with somebody else who had a need, and then I created the keyboard for them.
Mm-hmm. There's the keyboard aspect, which is the input. There's the rendering of the glyph. But then for languages that have diacritical marks and things where there is multiple keystrokes to get a thing, like Urdu. For example,
mm-hmm.
you type something and then hit space and then it fundamentally changes something else. That is that swapping Unicode glyphs out for different things? Is there an engine? Because that's not just like ethnocentric monolingual people who speak just English. They're used to typing one key and one thing happens. And the only time any kind of cording comes along is when you hit shift and something else. But the idea that you type 3, 4, 5 characters and then hit space and then something totally different happens is very, kind of, for lack of a better word, foreign to them.
Yeah.
I'm curious what magic is going on there because it's more than just a visual keyboard and it's more than just font rendering.
That's right. Yeah. So that's kind of where Keyman, the power of Keyman comes in and where it moves beyond what MS-KLC can do, for example. So what we have in Keyman is what we call contextual input. So we look at what's already in the text store or on screen for a more visual description. And then we combine that along with a keystroke and transform what's already on screen with that keystroke into an output. So for instance, if you have an A and then you type a combining acute mark, it may, instead of having two characters, an A and a combining acute character, actually remove the A from the text store and put in an A with combining acute or A with acute,
mm-hmm.
As a single character.
You have to keep that stack around, though, because presumably then when I hit backspace, I don't mean to remove the character. I mean to back up the thing I just did.
Yes and no. Yeah. Backspace is an interesting one. We've had lots of discussions about backspace.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, I just typed in Urdu and typed four characters to get one, then hit backspace, and it backed up one logical step rather than removing the one logical character.
Yes. And it depends. So if you look at Chinese IMEs, if you type backspace after you've committed your character, it actually deletes the whole character and you have to retype it.
Oh, okay.
So it does really depend on the language and how it's working. So yes, you do have to maintain a stack or have access to that context. And that's also an interesting story.
Yeah. I could definitely see how people, one person could feel very passionately that backspace should behave this way. And other people might say, oh, no, of course not. It's backspace is undo. It's back up a moment, not back up everything.
Yeah. So the simple answer I give to people now is, well, if you're not happy, you can create your own keyboard layout.
which is interesting because that's exactly what people do. You've got, like you said, thousands of keyboard layouts. So you said that when Windows Keyboard Maker came along 10, 15 years ago, that was a moment where you thought maybe this would stop. When Windows 7, then 8, then 10, of course, you know that lots of people, you know, hundreds, I'm sure, of people at Microsoft are trying to make as many languages as possible work as well as possible. And I know that Windows 10, for example, included a lot of really great new support for Amharic, Tigrinya, and Gez-based languages. But there's no reason to stop. Like you're saying that there's still considerable value that Keyman can offer.
Yeah, so there's two different parts to that again. One is now that it's multi-platform, it means that if somebody does want to create a layout for a language, they can do it once and it's going to work on the majority of devices out there, not just on Windows or not just on Mac. And the other one is because it's open source. Now, it wasn't originally, but it is now. It means that, you know, you've got that freedom, which you don't necessarily have to do what you want with the keyboard. You're not necessarily dependent on what Microsoft's design choices are. And they might be great design choices, but they might not be the ones you want.
And it's not, and Microsoft and Windows itself isn't, for lack of a better word, actively trying to thwart this kind of thing. Like it's okay to have different keyboards and different plugins and the ability to use different stuff that's not what's out of the box.
Yeah, I've got a really great relationship with a lot of the guys and people at Microsoft who have supported me in the past in developing Keyman and filling that gap. And so I really appreciate the work they've done in terms of adding all that extra support in Windows 10.
And then,
I don't see there's a big issue there. In some ways, if the need for Keyman went away because the operating systems did it all, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Well, I'd be a little sad. I think if I'd spent 20 years working on it, I might be a little frustrated.
Yeah, it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, I think that
maybe in 10 years.
The ability also to go to, for example, Keyman Web, then see a keyboard and then drag a button to your bookmarklets toolbar and then suddenly use that keyboard in your web browser is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, that's one of those interesting ones. That was I think I did that on an airplane trip just as for fun. And then I had to support it.
But did you, maybe you didn't think that was the use case, but someone said, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I needed. I want to plug, you know, I'm doing a blog just for people who speak Amharic. Therefore, I want to make sure that they can comment. I'll have a browser add-in and a plug-in for a CMS or a web, you know, WordPress that will allow anyone to comment regardless of operating system or any limitations that their computer might have.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who have done that. And I think web-based keyboards are also interesting because Google now have quite a lot available with, their virtual keyboard. So there's a bit of competition out there for Keyman Web, but there still gets thousands of daily visitors to the site. So
it's
using it.
It's free now, and people are using it, thousands and thousands and thousands. And people can go to keyman.com or keymanweb.com, and they can download. And when they're downloading it, they would be downloading the keyboard for their language, can they download, like if they were in Belgium, they could download 3 or 4 keyboards for the 3 or 4 languages they might speak, or is it one per download?
They can. So basically there's the engine, the Keymain app, which they install first, and then they can add as many mm-hmm. keyboard layouts as they need. So once you've installed the app, you can just go and add additional keyboard layouts through the app or mm-hmm. through keyboard package files on the web.
Mm-hmm. And do I understand that you just launched a beta of Keymain for Mac?
Yes. Yeah. So it's interesting because I feel like we're going through the same journey in undocumented space with Keymain for Mac as we did with Keymain for Windows. Mm-hmm. When we start to work for lack of a better word, esoteric languages, which operating system designers haven't necessarily even imagined, mm-hmm. and the intersection of that with the lower level keyboard input, which is usually fairly lightly documented, we run into all sorts of interesting problems and mm-hmm. unexpected challenges and consistency issues between applications and how people deal with backspace and whether they try and take over and do their own thing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But in the short term, your goal, or maybe the long-term goal, is that the keyboards that already exist are operating system non-specific. So if I've got a keyboard, I'm developing a keyboard that's an existing Windows keyboard, for the most part, I can just bring that keyboard into the Mac version.
Yes. I think there's only, for the Mac, that's very much true. There's, I think, 3 or 4 keyboards which have IME functionality, which prop up user interface, which would have to be rewritten for Mac. But mm-hmm. yeah, the vast majority are straight over.
All right. And all of this is on GitHub at github.com/keymainapp.
Correct. Yes.
Fantastic. And I assume that you would not be, you would not turn away good help from smart people who might want to get involved in open source and get involved with Keymain?
I would be very, very welcome. Yeah. So we're a small team, as these things always are, and mm-hmm. Can never do all the things we want to do.
Fantastic. Well, if you speak another language that is not English, I would encourage you to check out keymain.com and, of course, github.com/keymainapp. Thank you so much, Mark Durden, for chatting with me today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.